Okay, that's enough of the Raven. I can't even tell if I'm coming through. Oh, there we go. It's enough of the Raven. So we got our guest here, Richard Saraday, and we will do the intro. So unprofessional, but every time I hear professional sounding shows, they make me want to not sound like that. So that's just the way this show is. See, I even upcut the beginning music. What more could you want?
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
How much of that I want. You all know what that sounds like. Oh, it's Radio Mysterioso with a very bad board in here. Or at least one with a sticky slider. It's, what is today? Today is July the 8th, 2012. I was on Don Ecker's show the other night with my friend Richard here, who is with us now. Let me see if we can bring him up. Richard, are you there?
Boy, you know, I can barely hear you.
Okay, let me put the phone. Is that a little bit better?
That's a little clearer.
Okay. Well, maybe I can put the phone somehow where it's right next to the microphone or next to the speakers, maybe. Then you can hear me fine. How's that?
That's good.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just have the phone microphone pointing at the speakers. That'll work. Yeah, so we had a show mainly discussing, I guess, what I had announced 2 weeks ago at the on the alternative universe eye conference, who the identification of the Falcon was, and I've already started getting messages from not messages. Nobody's bothering me at all, which is actually good. What I've started doing, Richard, is getting messages for people to tell me go look at what people are saying here and there and. A lot of it's insane to me. It's the first thing that surprised me. Richard, how are you?
I'm good. This is it's wonderful because now there's a time for people to react to the story and to talk a little more about it. And perhaps you can, go through the chain of discovery of the identity of Falcon.
Okay.
Interesting. I was just up on one of the forums and one of the regular. Skeptics posted there. Did you see his post?
I didn't see it.
Yeah. I just have the school of thought that everything that happened is completely made up in Bill Moore's head.
Well, that's one extreme. It's funny. Well, that's the furthest extreme I've heard that they just won't believe anything because some of these people have no capacity for nuanced thought, I don't think. It's either got to be true or it's not true. That's it.
Well, that just surprised me that with the corroborating stories and
well, there isn't really. I mean, the only corroborating
pretty real. You know.
Well, the only I was surprised the acceptance by a lot of people because it's the only real word I have is Bill Moore's, and the fact that it in light of everything else that happened and as things were described to me by multiple people, not just Bill Moore and Richard Doty, that's what it was. You know, that's what I found out, I think, is what was going on, which was a counterintelligence operation.
Yeah.
So this just continues that.
Well, Doty sure supported that concept.
What?
That it was a counterintel operation.
Yeah. That's the other thing. It's that I think it works to some of these people's advantage when they find out that half the time or some of the time they can't be trusted, because people that want to trust them, and this happens over and over again, people that want to trust what these people have said will trust it without question if it matches up with their preconceptions. And if it doesn't, then they're, you know, lying, misinformation, government people. And that's not how it works, I don't think. It's, you have to cross-check things and check open sources and check other sources and talk to people that you trust, maybe some people that you don't trust, and see if you can paint some kind of picture.
That's what intel gathering is.
Yeah, you have to paint some sort of a reasonably supported picture based on what you've found out, and then be able to adapt that if you hear an overwhelming amount of evidence to the contrary, or at least that will change it. And that most of the reactions I've seen, because the people that actually say something will have a strong opinion, I guess, but most of the reactions I've seen are either it's total BS or isn't this amazing, and you know, we finally know. It's like, I didn't say that. I said that this is the best guess right now. I'd like to find confirming or contrary evidence from somebody that has more time, energy, and or more importantly, access and tickets than I do, or people that I know do. So I don't know. I mean, the first one I saw was, and I can't remember who it was from, was like, oh, I get it now. What it was they were trying to confuse and cover up the UFO subject and discredit UFO researchers under the guise of a counterintelligence operation. That's what it is. Whoa! That's like way further than I'd take, I wouldn't take anything too far, but I should have realized that would be one of the reactions. And then, of course, the other one from the other end is, it's all 100% total BS. Well, then it's very easy to dismiss everything and not have to worry about it, because you've dismissed it by saying nobody can be trusted and there's nothing to it. Meaning everybody is lying 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, oversimplified. That's no gray. Not able to absorb contradictory evidence.
Yeah.
I accept it. It's very interesting. That Bill is, in this particular case, the source of that particular guesstimate of the identity. This guy, how do you pronounce his name again?
Rositsky.
Rositsky. Yes, Rositsky. He's no spy master. So if it's phony, he made a very shrewd choice to make it all up.
Yeah,
but I guess if people are not inclined to believe anything, then they're not inclined to believe that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But the idea that Billy made up the whole thing, all this stuff was just made up by Bill. The MJ-12 papers, Benowitz case material, is all made up by Bill. I think it's taking it too far.
Well, it's if you've one, talk to Bill, which I have many, many, many times. And then more importantly, talk to other people.
Other people. Yeah, there is Jamie Shandera. There is,
I talked to Jamie, albeit not for the book, but quite a bit in the past before he kind of dropped off the radar. I talked to Gary Massey, I believe, who was an old cattle mutilation researcher from way back, and his impressions of what was going on at the time. I talked to Krista Tilton, of all people, who was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book called The Benowitz Papers, based on what she thought when she interacted with Paul Benowitz. And
I want to come back to her and the timeline with that one. Go ahead.
Yeah. Gabe Valdez, of course, I talked with him. These are just some of the people. Leo Sprinkle. Tom Dooley from the NSA, Doty, of course, Jerry Miller, and Bill. And those are just a few of the people I've talked to.
Right.
Now, if you can talk to all those people and say it was 100% total BS, you just can't if you listen to them.
No.
Because there's a lot of internal consistencies in what they told me. And these people, some of them never met each other. Unless you posit some sort of thing where Bill, either everybody's in on it or Bill and Doty fooled everyone, which I seriously doubt.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, when Don said he thought it was wrong, they should be going in and rearranging the furniture in Paul Benowitz's house when he wasn't around. And he said, I think that's terrible. And I said, well, that's only part of the story. I talked to Gabe Valdez, and I remember what he told me was that Paul knew that they were doing this. At first, he was kind of freaked out. Then Doty or somebody or somehow he figured out it was the government doing it. And he said, well, I'm working with them, so I guess I got to expect they're going to keep an eye on me. I mean, that wasn't what made him crazy. What made him crazy was, one, himself, and two, possibly, and nobody ever refers to this, was the fact that he said he was being injected with chemicals and being told to do things at night. And he, Bill, for one, said he saw these injection marks. Now, why would he tell me that?
Yeah, I mean, sure, you could, if you want to say he made it all up, I guess you're inclined to believe he made it all up, but I'm inclined to believe him. And I'm inclined to believe that treatment of Benowitz took place because the after effects were so obvious.
Yeah.
But, and there are other people who saw him go through it.
Yeah. And there's another, it's another example of the all or nothing. It's horribly evil, total government people, screwing everybody, screwing up Paul Benowitz. And, well, that's only part of it. Yes, they basically stood out of his way and encouraged certain things when they thought it took him away from the base.
Well, that's what I want to get back to.
They didn't say, we're going to drive him crazy.
His interest in the underground base filled with the aliens.
Same results.
So. I mean, that he was well into this scenario before Bill Moore entered the picture.
Yeah, he was also
I think it was Krista Tilden wrote the book interviewing Myrna Hansen. Is that who it was?
Really? Is there an interview? Because I have that book.
Is that who? No, but isn't Myrna Hansen the abductee that...
Who started the whole thing. That's who Paul... Gabe Valdez heard about her. Gabe knew that Paul Benowitz was into the UFO thing, so steered her towards Benowitz. In fact, drove her from her home in Eagle's Nest, northeastern New Mexico, to Paul Benowitz's home. Before any of this happened, before the Air Force thing, before contacting anyone, that period was... in the immediate time before that, probably a few months before, actually. That's another thing people don't realize, is he's already involved in it, one, and two, well on the road to, being completely unbalanced at that point, according to Leo Sprinkle.
If
there's any UFO research that says Leo Sprinkle's a big fat liar, then there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, but I think that timeline is very important to point out, that how deeply he was into the whole, underground base and Dulce scenario. I was just saying, am I right that the woman it's all based on was given the name Myrna Hansen? I don't know if that's a real name.
I don't know if
that's
her real name either.
Krista writes her book on.
Yeah, I think that is her real name. I believe Leo Sprinkle referred to her as by that name when I talked to him, and I don't know if I ever asked if that was her real name or not. I heard that the last I heard she had moved to Northern California. So why does everyone move to Northern California and disappear? Anyway, she had moved to Northern California and just kind of dropped off the radar. I tried to find her, but I really couldn't for the book, and it just was not to be. I think she doesn't really want to be found. I wouldn't either if I were her. What we're talking about here is this announcement about who the identity of the so-called Falcon was, who supposedly ran a counterintelligence operation in the 1980s.
Greg, can I interrupt you for one moment?
Yeah.
I've got to answer a question from my wife.
Okay. I'll keep yammering.
Okay.
In the 1980s, and was featured in a book I wrote called Project Beta. Also, what happened in the aftermath of that is I tried to guess who this intelligence operative's name was based on clues given to me by Bill Moore. And eventually he told me that the guy's name was Harry Rositsky. I looked up some background on the man, did some research at the library, online, other open sources, just basically found out who he was and that his profile would fit the picture of what Bill was trying to build up for him. And as Brian Parks, who is a researcher that used to work with Bill Moore, said, he's never really found any evidence that it couldn't have been him, which doesn't really prove anything. What it proves is that,
right,
that either it was him or the story, somebody's made a great effort to keep the story fairly consistent. So, like I said, I didn't make this announcement saying this is who he is and there's no question about it. I just said this is the best guess and maybe somebody else can find out more. And all I've seen so far is people saying crazy stuff. anonymous from the or whoever or whatever group of people that is on the SERPO group came up, suddenly said, you know, that was misinformation. The real Falcon was Richard Helms, my old friend Richard Helms. Like, okay, you won't say who you are. Why did you hold this information up for so long? Why did you wait till somebody else said something? You know, and why did you wait about a week after it was announced before you said anything?
Yeah, anonymous.
Yeah, and why can't you reveal your name? And it's like,
so, who are you? If you know who a Falcon is, what are you, a Black Crow? No, that's somebody else. That's the COM 12 guy.
Yeah.
A Sparrowhawk? Or
yeah, yeah. So I do not know. It's and then on top of that, they added a whole bunch of things about human interbreeding with the reptoids and quadroids.
Well, I've done that, but that was very late at night when I was young.
Yeah. But it's not I didn't think it was relevant to discussion. I don't know why. If that's some, you know, what's the misinformation here? What I said or somebody talking about Richard Helms and reptoids and quadroids? I put that challenge to most people, you know, that are listening. So who knows if any of this stuff is true? I tend to think that Rositsky being a Falcon was more verifiable than reptoids and quadroids interbreeding with humans. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're having, as I described it many years ago, a conversation. This is all a conversation.
Yeah, which may never end.
Yeah.
And that's another thing people don't, a lot of people aren't happy with it. They don't like the, I brought this up before, but they don't like the, what's the word?
Irresolution.
Yeah, the excluded middle thing about it. Like, let's just leave it up in the air, maybe forever. And if we, you know, everything, I think, unless you're standing there when something was going on, everything else is a theory.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's a conversation.
Yeah. What is this certainty fetish people have?
Well, that's the way information flows, and that's the nature of intel gathering. You know, intel gathering is trying to get information that's not readily available. Trying to get information that correlates to add bits and pieces to other pieces of information, and from those little bits and pieces of information, try to connect the dots and make a guess of what it's saying.
Yeah.
If we had all the information, that wouldn't be intel, you know.
Yeah.
Intel involves analysis and guesstimation.
Yeah, based on the best evidence you can gather,
and you revise it with more evidence.
Yeah. So I wanted people to revise the Falcon Rositsky idea with more evidence from somewhere, even if they have to do it, you know, completely by themselves, or you know, back channeling it, or maybe not even, you know, and not even bothering me about it. I almost don't care. Maybe I should care that I've seen something that's on lists where it said Grant Cameron revealed who the name was. Like, well, not really, but I guess he announced it on his site. And they said, I trust Grant Cameron's research. It's like, well, Grant Cameron didn't do the research for that. However, what he did do was research practically everything else. And the fact that he doesn't automatically disagree with that, although I don't agree with Grant on some things, I'm no expert. The fact that he doesn't get all bent out of shape that it could possibly be Rositsky is telling to me, and it makes me, you know, makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah,
because he's, you know, before I did the talk, I had sort of a running dialogue going with him because he seemed to be the only person that even really cared, and he's been bothering me about it for years. So I said, Grant, I'm going to do this, and you know, and I asked him for some advice, and he answered a few questions of mine, and he brought out stuff that either I didn't know or I'd forgotten long ago. Grant Cameron knows more about UFOs and the government than a lot of, and has forgotten more than most people know, and he hasn't forgotten very much at all. So
yeah.
I do have to say that he was really helpful and really nice to me, and you know, he knows that I don't agree with him on everything, but that doesn't bother him, and that's I think that's good, and it's also pretty rare, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is pretty rare, I must say, but good.
Yeah. So what did you think of that, the announcement? I know you're, like, kind of predisposed to agree with me.
Well, yeah, you know, within the scenario, as I've seen it unfold, I will say this, my first reaction When you described his background was, well, yeah, it sure fits the bill, you know. And then, of course, the next chain of thought that came was the architecture and the arc of the operation, how long and how well-planned and how devious it was, you know.
Yeah.
Which is what I think... I wonder how that evolved in itself. It always seems like we're talking about groups that can that are kind of, you know, off the books running this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But with the cooperation of entities like the Air Force or
yeah.
the regular CIA.
Assets.
Huh?
These people, you know, I think that a lot of they deal with a lot of people and sources that are assets that aren't on the payroll.
Yeah, you know, it's like Redfern's book on the Columns Elite. These are all these UFO focused groups that described or uncovered or related by these people. Whether you're talking about the Aviary or the Working Group or the Columns Elite, they're all kind of off the book, so to speak. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that you know the Aviary was, as far as I know, a bunch of people that were various degrees of insider and various degrees of intelligence connections or employment.
Yeah, I think
trying to find out what the UFO thing was.
A bunch of people meeting in a room like in the X-Files and discussed, you know, where to go from here. I don't think it was ever something like that where
no.
they met in a room and discussed things.
It was just a bunch of people that thought they could get the answer about UFOs because of their connections. And I don't think really a lot of them really got those answers. That's another thing people forget about Bill, why he quit. He's just said, I went all this time and I found nothing that I could prove. It was very interesting and fun.
Yeah.
I met a lot of people and had some adventures, but I didn't really find out anything that, you know, he found out a little, but nothing to confirm the government knows a lot more about the UFO subject than,
yeah,
you know. You know what? He contributed to the interest and part of the myth and maybe even some of the facts that, yes, the U.S. government, among others, is interested in the UFO subject, has been interested for a long time, and has some records pertaining to that. Past that, he doesn't know. I don't think anybody does. I mean, unless you've got a belief system where you think, you know, everything's been answered and the government just knows, which a lot of people hold that opinion. And then, of course, there's Grant's idea that, and he brought that out in the interview, and I titled the interview that. It's called Disclosure Has Already Happened.
Yeah.
You know, how much more proof do you need that there's an interest there and that there's, you know.
Well, I've made the observation myself that, you know, when people say, well, I'll believe it when somebody, soldier number one talks, and I go, well, according to soldier number one, he did talk, and this is what he said, and soldier number four, and there have been many quote-unquote leaks, whether they're trustworthy, whether they're planted disinformation, that's another issue. But a lot of people who are in the, a lot of information has come out that claim to be UFO connected over a long span of time and through various sources. I mean, the whole crash saucer mythology that Len Stringfield, took testimony from people on, you know, but all kind of off the books, off the record, and could easily be seen as part of an elaborate piece of theater as well, I guess. So,
yeah,
you're right. There is no way of knowing just how broad and far the cover stories have been established for whatever it is they're doing. For its many uses.
Yeah.
You know, and while in the meantime, they may be nearly as ignorant as the average person on what's going on. I don't think they're that ignorant. I think they know, they follow the track, they're there, they see him, they don't, but, you know, I don't know how much more than that.
Yeah, I think some people know, we've discussed this quite a bit over the years, but some people know a lot, but they don't know everything. What's important is some people know a lot about the government's history with the subject and how they've reacted to it. not necessarily what it is. And I think what a lot of disclosure people are hoping is it's going to be exactly what they want and they're not and what they expect and not what actually would ever be announced. If it's not, if it doesn't come out in exactly the way that they want to hear it, then it's disinformation and lies. Which is I don't think I'm characterizing some disclosure people. I didn't say all, but some disclosure people like that. But
well, the old saying, you know, when faced with the truth or the myth, people always go with the myth.
Well, they go with what, and, you know, I'm guilty of this too. I try not to, but they go with what their predisposition is going
to be. Well, yeah, I guess that's how we interpret anything that we don't know for sure.
Yeah, at least initially they go with that. Mm-hmm. If they really are curious and really want to learn, then, like we said before, they let new information edit or revise what their current thinking is.
Yeah, because, you know, it ends up looking more like a collage than a linear story. A lot of overlapping things that have no putting together except as a collage.
Yeah. I did not write out a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about, Richard, because I know that when we talk, we just get going, and that's fine. Maybe some people don't know, even though you've been on the show a couple times before, you know, how we met and what happened to us in subsequent years and who we met and how our opinions on, I mean, my opinions on this have been shaped very heavily by the things you've shown me and people you've introduced me to and things that we've talked about over the last, 15 years or more?
Good God, yes. From the, I'd say from 93.
Yeah.
God, that's a long time, Greg.
Yeah, did you call me first? I can't remember. Did you get my number from Vicky?
Yeah, I did.
Or, you got it from, I think, Peter Stenzel.
I tracked down Peter Stenzel. I forget how, but, after reading the zine, you know, after reading the Student Middle, I thought, I'd like to get to know these guys.
And
I called him and said, you know, I'd like to talk.
Yeah, I think he realized that you'd probably be more interested in talking to me, or I don't know what happened, but yeah, we met, I guess, through Peter. But then around 95 or 96, that's when the Mike entered the picture.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when that happened.
Well, we have to look at
it. Happened earlier, you know.
Yeah, it was quite a while. I mean, you knew him first.
It happened. I think I met him in. I think I met him in 92 or 93.
Oh.
That's when I was asked to cover that, yeah.
Oh, so that was about the same time we met.
Yeah.
No, maybe I knew him longer than I thought I did, unless you took a while to tell me about him, because then he started passing stuff to me that he wanted to put in the, put in the magazines.
Well, I would say, if I were to guess, for maybe 6 months before I met you, 6 months to a year.
Okay. Maximum. What the hell was he trying to do? I know some people have heard this story, but
well, you know, I never have come to a, you know, any more than, you know, estimations about what the hell he was trying to do. I think it's a it's a complex picture, but basically, he was spreading a tale representing the Navy's point of view on some of these matters concerning UFOs and also. To present other facts of broader nature about how the game works, you know, and the broader implications into which the UFO and military-industrial complex and its interests collide, you know. It had many fingers to it, you know, his presentation when I was asked to cover it for UFO magazine. And since it was happening in Santa Monica, Vicky called me, and since I lived in Santa Monica at that time, said, do you want to run over there? It's happening on 4th Street at the Women's Center. Steve Polidoros has been bugging us to cover it, you know, this Com-12 presentation. I said, sure, I'll go cover it. And that's how I met Mike Younger that night. I introduced myself as there from UFO Magazine and asked if I could have a few minutes of his time afterwards. We chatted, and... from the very beginning, it had a lot of, spy versus spy stuff. I was given a contact number and told how to use it and what to do when certain things happen on the phone line, which is basically waiting to the outgoing message that said, it's not taking any messages, and then to put in a phone number and hang up, and then I'd get a call back.
I didn't know about this.
Well, there you go. More stuff for the book. So that's how I started. I started with long phone calls and then meetings. And then Steve Polydorus. When I first saw Polydorus, Noah Hayakawa, and Gary Schultz making these presentations, I was kind of like, eyes rolling, Really, my eyes were rolling like, oh, my God, all this super conspiracy stuff. I didn't lose a lot of that. At the time, it was so thick and it was so conspiratorial. There was so much of that going on with the Bill Coopers and, COM-12 and the aviary. I was just trying to go, this seems to be, some of this stuff seems to be coming from the government. And if this is the case, I'd like to see, what's behind it. Basically what Bill Moore kind of presented too, that pull back the curtain a little bit. Get close enough to where you can find out who's pushing this. Who's behind this and what's it about? And, I don't think to this day we really know the whole story on the operation that is known as COM-12, but I think it was an off-the-books operation as well. To that extent, I think Younger was speaking the truth.
People might not know quite what's going on here. What this guy was somebody that presented himself to Richard and then later me as somebody working for Naval Intelligence and trying to get information. It's basically the same story of the Air Force or the aviary trying to get information out of the government, thinking they could get it out through certain certain non-traditional means. And
if you point to like what Younger was saying about the operation of the whole Bob Lazar operation, when it came to their attention, quote unquote, they knew exactly what it was, and it wasn't what it claimed to be at all, and they think it was an operation again to attract responses to the presentation and the location and see what sniffs around, and using that to attract potential espionage talent that might be trying to learn foreign governments. I think at that time that really was the primary purpose of it.
Yeah, and the other thing was there might have been an inter-service thing because they knew that I had contact with Bill and that was an Air Force thing and they could maybe drive a wedge in there or get whatever it was.
Yeah.
I don't know what – I probably said a lot of stuff to Mike that I probably shouldn't have or didn't know I shouldn't have. But, I'm sure what I heard from Bill and anyone else I was talking to at the time was quite controlled as well. Some people get angry about that. Why do you deal with people that are lying all the time? It's like, they're not lying all the time. That's the point.
No, they're not. It's a subtler game and more complex game than that.
And if you're interested in that game, above and beyond the UFO thing, I think Bill and other people like him and to a lesser extent, you and I, were sort of involved in a game and enjoyed that for what it was. Which was a very complicated game where you didn't know it. Talk about video games and role-playing and all that. This was the real thing.
Yeah.
Or it sort of was. We were on the far, far end of it. But, this is how things are run, behind everybody's back. And, wars are started and probably more often prevented by all this junk going on in the background that nobody knows about. And a lot of people get angry about
it. We both got from our exposure to Younger and his point of view.
Yeah. And the other part of his point of view, which sunk in with me, and also from Bill and Doty and these people, is that a lot of people get angry. It's like, why all the secrecy and why doesn't the public know? It's like, well, if that was the case, we wouldn't need to play these games. if everybody knows what's going on, then there's no, it's not in human nature to be completely open with anybody ever, at least in most people's nature, and especially when there's competing ideologies and ideas and everything. It just doesn't work that way. The fact of the matter is that, Ken's calling in.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that, hi, Ken, can you hear me?
Hey, Greg.
Yeah, there he is. Just a sec. I can't remember where I was going with this. Oh, the fact that there is all this secrecy and some of it has to be maintained really bothers a lot of people, and I disagree with that. I think some of it should be maintained because just the way things are. The other things that are completely useless to have any secrecy on is just because people are so into the secrecy that, you know, and it allows allows people with power to abuse it, and that's wrong. But wielded properly, I think that it, you know, it's benefited people in ways that people don't know, and they never will.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I through my discussions with, you know, people within that world and who have moved in that world and worked in that world militarily, I must say I've developed respect for the people way deep behind the scenes who have to balance all the interests and, you know, apply their take and their level of intel, which is, you know, as deep as it gets almost, to make decisions on things, on life and death things, and on on how to protect programs or how to uncover a spy. You know, these people are extremely skilled and extremely bright. However, they may not look like it when you meet them and talk to them, because they're usually, you know, not that evident.
Yeah, well, they, you don't. You think of it as people walking around with trench coats or sunglasses on or the whole bit. No, they're just. You would never notice these people until, and you would never notice unless you said the right things to them or they were told to talk to you. If you say the right things to them, all these little keys open little doors and they will open up a bit. On things that make, because what you're doing is the currency there, and Richard and Mike and people taught me that the currency is information. It's not money. It's not ego. None of that. The currency is what can you tell me that I don't know, and what can I tell you that you don't know, and if that information holds up, maybe we can do a little bit more business in the future.
Yeah, a lot has to do with spy versus spy technologies for the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the usefulness of the UFO as a screen for that.
Yeah, I mean, we get lost in this thing. You know, either we get lost in the spy thing or the UFO thing, but they're, in the manner that we're talking about now, they're intimately connected. Ken's sitting here waiting for us, Ken Thomas. Let me plug him in here.
Oh, great.
And make sure he can hear us. Is it this one? Oh, there he is. Ken, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Okay, all I hear is
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. What's so funny?
Okay, what you guys were just saying about secrecy and how it's kind of good sometimes that people use it to manipulate their way into power.
I didn't say it was good that they use it to manipulate their way into power. I said nothing of the kind. I said
that
it's...
Did you guys do a review of Richard Helms' history?
No, please. Give us the encapsulated version, Ken. I'd appreciate it. I was very curious to remember what years he served as director.
Oh, God, I can tell you that. That's easy enough to find on Wikipedia. But he was a director under Nixon.
Yeah,
And Nixon tried to get him to dissuade Ehrlichman, I think, from giving information out over something he called the Bay of Pigs,
right,
which was actually a reference to the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And actually, what I was thinking, the analogy, the best analogy I can think of with Richard Helms being such an important player amongst his, in the intelligence world for so long, and then finally kind of degenerating into doing this silly UFO cover-up type radio show, the analogy to me was with Curtis LeMay. Curtis LeMay, who was also a Kennedy assassination figure, who actually watched the JFK autopsy. And, you know, this was the guy who was responsible for the firebombing of Tokyo, who was a very important player. He, too, at the end of his career, was shooting Trevor James Constable redesigned Cloudbuster guns called Spiders. And so he, too, was kind of pushed into the UFO underground, just like Helms does, if all this was true.
I don't think Helms was pushed into the UFO underground, and I don't think he really cared about it. I think it was a very, very. He might not even been aware of that part of it. I don't think. If he was, it was just kind of like a one detail in a very large picture with him. That's what I think.
You're saying
I
he's a Falcon, right?
Huh? No, not Helms. Okay. No, that's what the quote unquote and the anonymous guy said on the Serpo board, that, you know, it's not Harry Rosicky. It was this guy. It was Richard Helms. It's like, no, it, you know.
That, okay. I haven't followed it this close. We had a little exchange and didn't make that exactly clear. So you're identifying somebody other than Helms as.
Yeah. Well, who I identified Helms as was the guy that was taking information from Rosicky as the Falcon on Russian, you know, operatives in this country, and also what was being pulled out of agents in Russia, taking all that information off the books and passing it through back channels to the CIA in the 1980s.
Right, and this is the early 80s, 1982.
Yeah, well, starting in probably 81, and probably even before, because I believe they contacted Bill Moore in 1981. And that
went. So Helms was out of the position there for how long at that point?
Well, he'd been out since 76, I think.
Right? Yeah, so he'd been out of it for, what, 6 years at that
point? He was called to testify at the 77 church hearings on the CIA abuses that were triggered by the Frank Olson incident.
Right.
Remember, Ken?
Yeah. Of course Ken knows that
one. Okay, so then moved into the low-level intelligence gathering in the UFO community. But you're saying it's not that big?
No, that was a little tiny part of a very large operation, as far as I've been able to determine, and a few other people, too, is that this little part of all the stuff that UFO people are excited and upset about is a result of a very small part of a very large operation involving Russian counterintelligence, off the books operation run by Richard Helms and
I think the distinction might be here. The CIA director doesn't run the program. He has a deputy director assigned to run the program. That may be how Rosicky was functioning, you know.
Well, he was
he authorized the program. He gets updates on it, but usually that's, you know, that can be his main job, is running an operation.
Yeah, well, Stansfield Turner was director of CIA up to 81, and then who was after that, Colby?
81, wait a minute, was somebody up to Stansfield, I think, before Colby.
Anyway, whoever came in.
Vice president.
Yeah, whoever came in.
We have the web page up right now.
Whoever came in 1981, I think.
Served as an interim, I think. He only served like 15 months or something, but I think that was back in the early 70s or something? When did Inman serve? Was that between, might have been before Turner briefly.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I think what people fail to realize is that this whole thing with Helms and Rosicky and a few other people, maybe some members of the quote-unquote aviary, Bill Moore, Richard Doty, all of this was not an officially, you know, on the books, records kept, anything like that, operation. It was a bunch of people who used to be in the intelligence community, you know, quote unquote retired, still doing their job, still valued by the people in the intelligence community for their expertise and willing to help out.
Well, that goes on every day. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, when people retire from that community and they have knowledge of operations and contacts that they had, something comes along that calls upon those skills or that history or their experience, and you bet the hell they contact you.
Yeah. What did you say, Ken? It. I don't know if you can hear. When both of you are talking, I don't realize it. I don't know if you realize you can hear each other.
Sorry, I talking over Ken? I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying, I don't know if you can hear.
I'm just making a minor point that once you join the agency, they kind of really expect you to be there for life.
Yeah.
Well, if you're good at it.
Nobody really believes, for instance, that George Bush, when he supposedly left the CIA, he never had contact again.
No, I think if you're useful and skilled, yeah, you never leave. If you basically not, you know, if you just basically just a low-level person or were never that great, I don't think they really care if you ever come back or they contact you. But if you're good at it, it's like anything else. I mean, the job I have now, I was contacted by somebody I've known for 20 years. This is just in video, but for 20 years, and he said, you know what you're doing. Do you want a job? And it's if I had sucked at it, he'd never called me.
Right.
So it's the same thing, I think, with spooks. I mean, if they're good at it and they know what they're doing and they have the need for the person, they'll call them up and say, do you want to do this? And I think most of the time that's their passion. They'll do it.
Well, some people say that might be what Corso did.
Yeah, possibly. What do you think, Ken?
I'm sorry, I missed that. It might be what?
Richard said what we were just saying about people, you know, being kind of called out of retirement to do a few more things. Richard made a really good point. Maybe that's what Phil Corso did.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting point, yeah. It could be that all of these, Phil Corso included, that all of these UFO things that are connected, like Trevor James Constable being a Reichian cloudbuster guy, it could be that all of that stuff is designed to, that they don't really have a genuine interest, but it's all designed to keep people distracted from the main action of the agency and basically of the country. Little entertainment thing that they can control.
I don't know if it's a distraction more than it's a tool. If it's a useful tool, then they use the tool. A distraction. There are many distractions, but I think if it is a distraction, it's an ancillary benefit.
Well, the UFO subculture attracts people that are interested in high tech stuff and also kind of interested in spy activity. It's kind of always been that way. So you would expect, you would expect that the.
Oh, yeah, well, that's why they were used.
Or whatever, whatever you want to call the intelligence world, to have operatives not only just, attending the conferences, but, probably doing things like creating. I mean, who was this latest guy who was talking about Roswell?
Talking about what?
Oh, there was a recent announcement of some former intelligence person saying Roswell was 100% real and there were bodies and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Yeah, another CIA guy. I mean, how many CIA guys actually say this? I mean, so it says it so frequently, it's just, kind of interesting that it's not accepted as a fact.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny because as soon as the CIA guy says it was real and there were aliens and bodies there, all the great majority of UFO fans or whatever you want to call them say, oh my God, they're finally coming out with the truth. But if he'd said it had nothing to do with that, it was a secret operation and it was very
cover
important.
Up.
Yeah, big cover up. You know, which one's the cover up? The one that you don't like is the cover up, apparently. So who knows? I don't know.
I got this from Robbie Graham. You know the guy that does that website on movies.
Yeah,
I'm trying to see who this current figure is. And apparently he's on Coast to Coast. Charles Brandon.
Is that the name of the guy?
That's the name of the guy. I'm trying to figure out what his official position was at the CIA.
Yeah, I don't know.
I probably should have done all this homework before I called you up.
Yeah, well, he could have. You know what? He could have been a secretary somewhere and said this, and somebody would say, "Former CIA, former CIA, what? You know, head of intelligence, of Eastern Intelligence, or floor washer? What does he claim to be? You know, and besides, what difference would it make actually? Because
the CIA's Historical Intelligence Collection, or the HIC, the HIC.
So he was a historian for the CIA?
Apparently so. That's what he's claiming.
Okay. And he said he saw some sort of documentation.
He had the rare opportunity to look inside a box labeled Roswell containing materials, papers, and other items, but stressed that he cannot, will not, under any imaginable set of circumstances, tell you what I saw in there specifically. Gotta forgive me, I'm losing eyesight here.
Unless you guess it.
What's that?
Unless you guess what it was. I'll tell you if you guess. You know,
then I'll say yay or nay. Yeah. Hot or cold.
Yeah. That's funny. I saw all this stuff that's definitely extraterrestrial, but I won't tell you what it was. Well, what else do we need to know? Has disclosure happened? I don't know. I think so. It might not be what you want to hear, but stuff has been disclosed.
Right, right. You don't want to expose the Slinky Corporation.
Yeah, this is really kind of interesting. This guy supposedly is connected to Victor Marchetti, too. He was a deputy CIA guy.
Yeah.
Deputy to Richard Helms.
Marchetti was.
Yes.
Yeah, people may not know, Victor Marchetti was kind of a whistleblower that left the CIA and wrote a bunch of books about the abuses the CIA was involved in, which the CIA and people in the CIA hated him for, and other people, civilians and journalists and all that, were very excited about this stuff. Now, who knows if all of that stuff was true? Very certainly some of it was. But it was also one person's opinion.
He made some claims about UFOs, too, right?
Marchetti did? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What did
he
say?
Yeah. Well, let's see. According to Robbie Graham, fittingly, in 1979, Marchetti himself raised eyebrows with his own public statements on the UFO issue. In an article for Second Look magazine, Marchetti wrote, I do know that the CIA and the U.S. government have been concerned. Believe me, I can read. I'm just having problems with my eyesight. I've been concerned over the UFO phenomenon for many years, and that their attempts, both past and recent, to discount the significance of the phenomenon and to explain away that apparent lack of official interest is in it have all the earmarks of a classic intelligence cover-up. So it sounds like he's just speculating, but he's basically saying that all this denial that there is a phenomenon out there is part of a cover-up.
Yeah, well, you can deny under an umbrella of all kinds of denial, and then underneath that, what is there? What is there? And you don't know. The reality of what's going on, the reality of what they know, the reality of what's been covered up, whether it's extraterrestrial or not, that it's a very large umbrella, and people hear that, and they will immediately plug their predisposition into what that statement means.
It's hard to imagine that the intelligence world would not have infiltrated it and will not have tried to manipulate it, which you see, a lot of times over time. And so this Helms business kind of fits perfectly into that.
Yeah. Richard, are you still there?
I sure am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just, go right ahead. This is great.
Yeah, Ken, I don't disagree with
you at all. On Robbie Graham's page, the point is made that Marchetti was just expressing an opinion.
Yeah.
He wasn't, saying that he knew anything about it. He was saying that, that he felt, it was his opinion, that he felt that there was some, CIA cover-up of the phenomenon. Not, that he had access to secret files that proved that or anything like that.
Well, I don't think that at this point, maybe in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, it made a difference as to what some people in power could say about the UFO subject, either publicly or through back channels to form people's opinions. I think at this point, most people that have grown up since then kind of take it for granted that, there's extraterrestrials visiting us from other planets, or fairly convinced that that's the truth, and two, fairly convinced the government's covering it up. That's the working model now. Where the working model used to be for most people.
Say okay, the model may take some adjustments, but the fact that model now predominates and has a pretty high percentage of acceptance by the majority.
Yeah,
says a lot. Now they believe that there is something. They think of an extraterrestrial, that it's something pretty not of us is out there doing some shit, and. And the fact that they think the government knows a lot more than they're saying. Those two things go hand in hand. That's the use of the X-Files and everything else, right?
How do people in power use that now? They can use that belief now instead of the belief that they're covering something, the belief that everything's fine and that the wackos believe it. Now they use the belief that most people have, which is what we've just been talking about, to their advantage. And I don't know, how that manifests. You can make 100 guesses.
Well, it's like the issue of advanced UAVs being tested and designed and tested a lot earlier than people thought, and being utilized, and deployed. Again, if we didn't find out about the stealth fighter to the end of its useful life, same thing may be true about UAV technology. And there are many different sizes and shapes UAVs can take.
Yeah.
And the application of, the incursions on the nuclear weapons bases and the beam cast down. I mean, a microwave beam. I mean, that... Those things are achievable. I mean, we could make something like that. you know, that would seem, it would be stealthy and could shine a beam down and, you know.
Even in the, like, 1970s?
Well, I can't rule it out, really. I
can't either, but I'm just saying hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically, I think we maybe yeah, in the 70s.
So it's the thing that fascinates me, one of the things is that...
It is a push. I agree with
yeah,
you. It is a push.
I know. The thing that fascinates me that comes to mind is the guy I had on who would not identify himself or who he had worked for or anything like that, but he was describing lighter-than-air vehicles that were both lighter-than-air and had vectored thrust in them. So they basically could do things that people thought UFOs did, which was zip through the air and then suddenly stop on a dime and just hover.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, and they have, of course, with carbon fiber and Kevlar kind of materials, they can make these very hard shell shapes, which, of course, are much more aerodynamically efficient.
Yeah.
And make them really light, you know. And there's a lot you can do with that, combined with a turbine thrust and with the right shape. And, you know, it can be
and
very,
some of them may, you know, they may be solid, so it's easier for them to move like that. Or
mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, some of the movements seem like it'd be impossible for physical objects to do that. So, you know, perhaps they're projections. People hear this and they think that we're saying UFOs are all created by the military. That is
not at all.
Not at all. It does not. It would
well,
not
would,
account for large amounts of the data.
Know, if these craft do everything that they're described to be doing, then we probably would see them more in a military situation, right?
Well, who's to say they aren't used in a military situation? It's just we never hear about it because the people that are seeing them are really can't believe their eyes or they get freaked out by it or whatever.
But we do hear about the most advanced craft that the military uses. That you know,
we do?
It shows up in the news all the time. In fact, the Iranians downed one of the pilotless tracking gliders, and they made a big deal about the fact that they were back engineering it, you know?
Yeah.
You see that kind of thing all the time, but...
Well, that's the old... To me, that's the old argument, is that secret can't be kept. And I think if the secret's important enough, it can be. And two, it's not really being kept that well, is it?
Well, that's the whole point. And the way what you do is you're surrounded with a bodyguard of lies so that it's hard to tell which is the true story. You know, that's what you do with leaked material, is that you just throw so many different versions of it that, it finally loses all potency. You don't know.
That's what it seems to me to be the strategy. But if there is kind of a military intelligence infiltration of ufology, that seems to me to be what strategy they're using, that they would be using. They just inject all kinds of stories into the community and get all this discussion going and then just point to the general population. They see these guys, you know, they can't make up their own minds what they think they're seeing.
Well, I think the majority of UFO researchers are going to believe what they want.
Tracking how
so that's easy.
New memes spread, you know, leaking a new version of something that happened about Roswell and just seeing how it spreads.
Who's interested in what information, and if you spit something out, something else out along those lines, where it will travel.
Actually, there's an intelligence term for that. That's called the barium meal.
The what?
Because that's called a barium meal, because when you take barium, it's like a radioactive substance.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you have to, and then you track it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I use that in Project Beta. I wish I'd known that term. And my idea was you throw dye, you know, a colored dye down a drain, and then you look and see where the 400 drains comes out, which one it comes out later. And then you can kind of track, you know, where that went because you know where that drain went and what places it passed through. Or it comes out five of them or whatever, you know.
Right.
And then you can start tracing back, you know. And then all you have to do is put markers on different things that people are interested in and see, you know. It's kind of, you're doing, what's his name, Wisner's Mighty Wurlitzer again, where, you know, the CIA, at the time, he said, had control of the media to the point where they could change anybody's opinion about anything through their media outlets.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what's funny is in the way I found Rosicky's name, before I even told it to Bill, was with that name-based search they used to have online. It's name-based.org. And you could plug various spies' names into there through open sources. This thing had been put together through open sources. And what they did was they found a way to group people's names by how much interaction they had with each other based on open source information. And I plugged in, you know, Richard Helms and Cord Meyer and various people like that who used to be in the OSS and later were in the CIA. And Rosetsky's name came up.
Cord
and then
Meyer
when I put Rose... Huh?
You plugged Cord Meyer in there?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the guesses I had as to who...
Does Cord Meyer have a UFO connection?
No, but this is when I was trying to guess who the name was. And Bill said he used to be in the OSS. He was in the CIA. And he was an expert in Russian stuff, which I could have guessed from all the stories about Falcon anyway. But what was interesting is when I did plug... Rosetsky's name was one of the names that was in that... that cloud of names that came up on namebase.org's proximity search. And so then when I plugged Rosetsky's name in, when it was confirmed by Bill, I put his name in the center, and one of the names that was right near him was Frank Wisner. And this, like I said, based on open source, like novels, exposés people had written, even Rosetsky's actually, memoirs, things like that. All published material on these people and how they interacted with each other.
Was Barry Hennessy in that mix?
No, he wasn't, because he wasn't at the time. He still isn't considered, I don't think he's written anything. I don't think he's, referenced really in anybody's history, anything like that. And Hennessy was never in the CIA, as far as I know. He was Air Force Office of Special Projects in the early 80s at the Pentagon. He was another person that people had guessed was Falcon,
mm-hmm,
Ken.
Mm-hmm.
I just plugged into namebase.com.
There's a namebase.org, and it has the search of people's names as referenced in open source books and magazine articles. If you plug in somebody's name, it just tells you everywhere they've ever been mentioned according to their records. But the cool thing that they used to have was this proximity search where you plug in names and it just show you this huge chart of
that's really cool.
30 or 40 or 50 or 60 names and how connected they were to each other. And, they had lines connecting them showing if it was a strong connection or a weak one. And, and they'd have people's names near each other that were more in contact with each other. It was a fascinating thing, and it was a really good source of information. And that's what I used when I went to Bill and I started throwing names at him. And he finally got tired of it and said, it's this guy. And I said, well, Jesus, he's on this thing here. He goes, well, you hadn't said the guy's name yet, but apparently you had it.
Okay. I just plugged my name into it. I show up like 5 times in Namebase. How do you cross-reference?
I don't think it does that anymore.
Man, that was too good. I guess they took that away from us.
Yeah, proximity search. They may be still there. I don't know, but it was a namebase.org proximity search. Luckily at the time I printed out what I saw on my screen, and I still had those copies, so I scanned them and used them in a talk. I'm going to write up something about this sometime in the next week or two or three,
and
put those images in there to show people what I did. And it's nothing magical. It's just that I got 2 or 3 pieces of information that helped me do that, and I probably would have found the name out eventually. But what it was, I think Bill just got tired of me coming up to him saying, is it this guy? Is it this guy? Is it this guy? For like 10 months. And then we'd sometimes discuss why that person was a good guess or not, and how they were related to the operation, if they were. And very few of them were. In fact, almost none of them, except for Helms, as a name that came up. And then, Rosetsky's name only came up because he'd been mentioned in open sources, and he'd written, I think, at least 2 books on intelligence. One's called The CIA Secret Operations, and the other one was called The KGB, the Secret Eyes of Russia, or something like that.
As far as material related to the UFO subject, that's a probably a very singular set of files. There's probably a lot more the CIA would be afraid of having uncovered, networks and things like that, than some of this UFO information.
Yeah, I don't think that most people in the government and these intelligence organizations even care about the UFO thing. And the ones that do band together in these informal groups and try and find out what they can.
And as far as the DOD side of it, one can only guess. I'm sure they have, protocols because it's there. It's
yeah, I mean, they're like two or three levels above you and I, where they know some people and some things, and they're trying to use that to find out what they can about the UFO subject and how much the government knows about it. And I venture to say they haven't found out much more than we have.
Yeah.
You know, that, yes, there are UFOs. Yes, we don't know what they are. Yes, they are somebody else's technology. And no, we don't know what they are or what to do about it.
And now you've got to be able to figure out if you're looking at a UAV or not, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. People got some people got upset, have been upset over the years about, you know, why are you, you know, why you even care about all this government stuff, and how can we, you know, why is this even valuable? I think it's valuable because if some of this, some of these same kind of stories are thrown at people again, such as I think, to my mind, on the SERPO website, you know, all these red flags go up. You know, why are these people discussing this thing? Why such outlandish ideas? Why is the person anonymous? Why are they saying such, you know, why are they pushing certain buttons? It's not, you know, this guy's obviously trying to mess with us. It's, oh, here's somebody from the government paying attention to us. So whatever he says must be true. Like, I don't know where, how that follows. But the point of all this, you know, all of our discussion here is to try and find out what the false leads are and be able to inform ourselves when these false leads poke up their heads again in the future.
Well, that and I think getting our minds around the whole meme that we have grown up watch being created, those, you know, in the UFO field, from the misdirection of the Blue Book operation to you know, certain things we found about what Heineck has told us about the Air Force, you know, hiding the good cases, to the, you know, that really when you look at the development of disinformation regarding it and how. See, taking the UFO myth and using it to hide early on, you know, planes flying out of Area 51 and being mistaken for a UFO because who else could fly that high or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, that's sure, all that's understandable. And anytime you can hide your technology under a mustache, you know, like, oh, it's a UFO, you know, one hand washes the other in the sense, because we get stuck with what are we looking at? Is it military or is it not, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a natural, you know, camouflage that, of course, any military would use.
Yeah,
technology being seen as tested, you know. But, I am of the opinion that we did progress a great lot deeper into developing field propulsions at an earlier stage. I think it really began to show usefulness in the late 50s, in my opinion, that we could be responsible for so many of these sightings. But as far as whose craft or where they're operated out of and how that's done, you know, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Notice that Richard says many and not all, because there's no way.
No, many, not all.
Yeah.
By a long shot.
Yeah. I mean, there are effects on witnesses. There
absolutely. I'm not ever saying all.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying that, you know, we may be seeing a lot of things that, for all intents and purposes, look extraterrestrial, like black triangle,
or at least extra human, something like that.
Yeah,
you know what came up, Richard, as you were saying that a little bit earlier, is that what you were saying about the manipulating people's opinions and using their predisposition? I was thinking the entire UFO community, at least the ones that are interested in the government thing, and maybe not aren't. They've all had a Benowitz pulled on them for like 50 years.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they're going, and they've gone nuts in a certain way, just like poor Paul Benowitz did.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. You know,
it's a microcosm. You know, that case, I think, is kind of a microcosm of a lot of the things that have gone on in the, you know, disclosure government.
If you're operating the Hall of Mirrors, you know which one turns and lets you out and which one doesn't.
Yeah. Ken, are you still there? Ken, did you get cut off?
Ken? Well, we must have lost Ken. You want to call him back, or is he calling you?
I don't know. Did he get pissed and hang up?
Oh, I don't think so. We just probably lost him.
Ken, can you hear me? Ken? Ken, can you hear me? Apparently, he's picked up the phone. Something happened to Ken.
One of the mute buttons on.
Ken. Ken, are you there?
Went to get a cup of coffee or something.
Hey, Ken, are you there? Are you okay? Somebody rifling through your papers right now?
Anyway, let's see if he comes back.
All right.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if the Benowitz case, like, you know, Norio Hayakawa is deep into the whole Dulcie case, right?
Yeah.
To this day. And he's still convinced there is a base there. You know, I don't think he necessarily believes it involves aliens, but I believe there's a base there. And he believes it's connected with the Archuleta Mountain and Archuleta Mesa to this day, you know.
Yeah.
So Benowitz, what I'm saying is Benowitz wasn't the only one talking about Dulcie or you know, it was just the nature of the disinformation and the fact that you pointed out in your book that at the time it was used to take the eyes away from Kirtland and Sandia.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you look at the busting out of the Bob Lazar story, which, of course, drew a whole lot of attention to Area 51. Was that part of a plan? And if they want us looking there, or was that an accident, or what? Was that somebody's unauthorized, you know, a la Doty, going over the top operation?
Yeah.
Didn't know it would go that far.
Yeah, what's interesting that Don brought up, I thought, was, you know, did you ever think there was a connection between what was going on with I got my battery low on my recorder here, so let me stop that.
All right.
Just a second, let me get my other batteries.
All right. Well, let's see, maybe we can do an ad for one of your sponsors. Home Depot or
no, Home Depot isn't a sponsor.
No,
Pepsi. Apparently, AFOSI is a sponsor. Right?
Budweiser.
No. Ken, can you hear us at all? Ken, hello. Says call started. Apparently, he's still hooked up. I think, but I don't know. Maybe he isn't. Let's continue here. What I thought was interesting that Don brought up was: did anybody realize that right after Bill Moore, or actually right before Bill Moore made his speech in Vegas, the Area 51 rumors started up? And I said, I don't think there's any connection. And then I thought about it for a while. It's like, you know, that in the timeline, that makes sense. And two, I brought up the fact that Bill had been given that map in the sometime in the mid-'80s,
right,
showing basically Area 51.
And S4 and Saucer.
Yeah, there was a little line showing the runway, where the runway was, which everybody later knew from satellite pictures and all that, where the runway was. It also said that, you know, I think the length of it was actually written on there in red felt tip. And then there was another, like, dotted line that said S4 area, and another dotted line drawn around this area, like, to the northwest of the runway, some maybe 10 or 15 miles away. I can't tell the scale, but it said Saucer Mesa.
Well, yeah, I'm familiar with that that location, or, you know, with the references to it.
Yeah, and this was before the Las Vegas thing. It was before UFO Cover-Up Live. So, yeah, I mean, Don and you now have made totally legitimate points. I mean, is this part of something that was continuing and on a larger scale kind of Benowitzing the rest of the UFO community by drawing their attention over to what became known as Area 51?
Well, now, suppose there had been the recognition by elements of the foreign government, and we'd intercepted the information to know that they were onto it, about us testing a very advanced, you know, saucer-shaped craft out there, and had been for a while, whatever. And that, you know, we found that they were, you know, hanging out and getting information, whatever, much more than we wanted out there. And you wanted to try to deal with that issue, right, as you can continue to develop the technology, let's say. So, rather than deny the existence of the craft itself, because this is, again, a wrapping agendas and agendas, you know, why not create an elaborate story about element 115 and three gravity generators as the source of power, and get everybody in other countries looking at that as the... I'm holding on a second here.
Oh, sorry, Richard.
Go ahead. That's
I've
right.
I've got Ken here on the line.
Good,
I think.
Good.
Say that again, Rick. Ken.
You there, Ken?
I went up on nameless.org and plugged in Helms' thing, found my name in there on his page. And then everything.
6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, Richard says 6 degrees of separation.
Let me see if I go to my phone. If I
Ken, you're cutting in and out because you mentioned Richard Helms.
It's wavering.
Okay, I'm going to. I will try to call you back.
Sounds like he said I'll try and call you back.
Yeah, it's clipping.
Ken, if you call my cell number, we can mic that cell. I think it might be easier.
All right, well, wow, I'll wrap up what I was saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
While we're waiting for that to happen.
This is what editing's for.
Yeah. As I was saying, regarding this, in other words, another layer of possibility is that you want to misdirect, you know, the people from the technology itself by creating a false story of the, you know, the technology, and see where that false story goes. You know, while at the same time you are indeed testing some pretty sophisticated UAVs or something, you know, out there that you're trying to
listen.
So.
That's Ken.
The extension of this disinformation and the gray alien scenario into the Bob Lazar scenario, the inclusion in both the Aquarius briefing document and in Lazar claiming the documents Lazar claims have been shown and read included the religious issue and the eschatological issues, the origins of mankind.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very, you know, like. What? Why would they create all, you know, all this eschatology?
Yeah,
and put it in there. It wasn't necessary.
Well, you know,
it may have its own justification that we're not aware of.
Yeah, I mean, it may hook in with the Collins elite people. I have in some of my talks. I don't think I put it in the book. Well, maybe I did, but letters that Benowitz got.
You're very far away.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was what I've brought up in talks were these letters that Benowitz got from from somebody. He said that he got into the whole religious thing about aliens that put Jesus here and Muhammad and
right.
Buddha and I don't know why that had been brought into the conversation, just like you said, and then I guess it was pushed again during the Area 51 stuff.
Well, that's what I'm pointing out, and I think that's a real eyebrow raiser right there. You know, because as you deconstruct this material more and more, you know, something which we sniffed and talked about, you see much more about perception management and creating a new mythology. It's the mythology in this sense is kind of deflating to some pretty sacred religious ideologies.
Yeah,
very deflating.
I think it was thrown in there just to get more controversy in there and more people arguing and more, you know, noise.
Yeah, another whole group of people to get all wrapped up in it. Another layered.
Yeah,
you know, more stuff in the stew stirring around.
Yeah, and there may be something to the fact that.
But those are pretty disturbing things to include. You know.
Yeah.
They're disturbing, just like returning the cattle to the site where it was taken after it's been worked on or whatever, dropping it back down there. That's a whole other disturbing level of the phenomenon. You know, they could just keep the cattle, and this element of it's very disturbing would not be there. It would just be missing cattle.
Yeah.
But the mystery and the bizarreness of it is another whole part of the agenda, which I find disturbing.
Yeah, I think there's maybe an element in there where things might have gotten slightly out of control and that various agendas were thrown in there that didn't need to be, and I don't know what the justification was. Maybe it was just to make things so mucked up and so ridiculous that they basically washed. Whoever was doing it just said, "Okay, that's the end of it. I'm going to throw religion in there now and not worry about it anymore because that'll just spin it off into complete wacko land instead of just." And I'm not saying religious people are wackos, but very very strongly held opinions that aren't based on anything except belief.
Yeah, so it feeds a certain part of the UFO phenomenon, the cultish aspects, and of course. That's always been a big part of the UFO field, is the believers and all the cults that grow up around them, whether it's the Disclosure Project kind of believer,
yeah,
or the Nation of Islam, for that matter. The UFO is very much part of their, you know, what's his name's preaching.
Yeah.
What's it, Louis Farrakhan?
Who?
Farrakhan, yeah. The Nation
of Farrakhan,
Islam,
yes,
Louis,
yes.
Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, he had a, in fact, the first I knew about this was that Jim Moseley showed me the cover of the, of one of their Nation of Islam's newsletters, and the front of it had a huge UFO on it.
Yeah, so I think you can look at it as a UFO cult.
Yeah, in part, you know, at least the way that Farrakhan was trying to present it,
yeah,
at that time, sometime in the early
90s. Nation of Islam.
Yeah, Nation of Islam, not the Islamic religion as a whole. So I don't know if he was trying to update it, or I think the story was he said he had some vision where he was taken on a starship,
yeah,
and they told him that the Nation of Islam was very important, and, you know.
The usual stuff.
The usual stuff.
Yeah.
So not only does the Lord smile upon them, it's also aliens. but, yeah, I do not know the reason for throwing religion in there, and especially in introducing it. It was very late in the game, too, with Paul Benowitz.
Well, see, that intrigues me very much, that you know, as far as belief shaping or shifting society
what noise is? That's Ken's through Skype.
Whatever purpose that might serve, that it's intentionally done for a purpose.
Yeah.
And of course, there was all that. Those guys caught up in the CIA back in the 70s with the channeled material, you know, through the Uri Geller and that whole end of the spectrum. They were really into this, channeling the nine.
Oh, really? There were government people that were into that?
Oh
that's, you're right, you're right.
The nine.
Yeah. That was Einhorn was all into that for a while, too, or the best people
right.
He was contacting.
And there was another group in Europe that was getting contacts of a similar nature from a group that called itself the Nine, you know, channeling, being channeled. And it was all connected with Egypt and with Mars and that whole scenario that Holdman and those guys kind of follow the trail on, you know?
Yeah.
But that started with the Nine.
I never really realized that, but you're right.
Quite interesting trail to follow.
Maybe you better background people a little bit on this nine thing.
Well, it's been so long since I read about it. I had to pull a couple of books off the shelf and refresh myself. So I hesitate to kind of like trying to launch into it because I think it'd be more confusing than enlightening. But basically it was material that was being channeled, and one of the channels for it, I think, may have been, who was Uri Geller's associate? Puharich.
Oh, Andrea Puharich, yeah.
Yeah.
Another forgotten and very important figure in the...
Well, I think he played prominently in the whole nine scenario.
Yeah.
And there was, again, a group in the CIA who were quite enamored with the nine.
Yes.
And, you know, and a connection with Mars and had some, you know, beliefs about Mars and its connection to us.
Yes. This is starting to come back to me.
And the Egyptians.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a, you know, they thought they were starting some sort of new secret society with some sort of answer to the questions of the universe because
the
channeled information.
Well, again, it's an example of how far, the DARPA and the CIA and elements in the military were going and exploring these different things and how much they were vulnerable to be influenced by you know.
Yeah.
None of this surprises me because when I came to, you know, L.A., I began my own investigation into psychic phenomena. A lot of this stuff was in full swing. I mean, I got involved with the Edgar Cayce organization, and I remember that Russell Targ and who is the other guy from the SRI came to visit one of our meetings, monthly meetings. And what they were basically doing was screening talent, psychic talent, it looks to me like, now looking back, for, you know, the program that they were doing.
Was the other one Hal Puthoff?
Pardon?
Was the other one Hal Puthoff?
Not Hal Puthoff, the other guy. I hate saying the other guy. Ah, I can't think of his name.
Who, the psychic? I can't remember his name either.
Other Stanford guy.
Okay. I can't think of anybody else right now.
Okay. It'll come to me if I don't reach for it.
Not the psychic guy from New York that taught the remote viewers.
Not Ingo.
Not Ingo Swan. Okay.
No. It'll come to me if I let it go.
Okay.
Right, anyway, all that stuff is flying around really, really heavily. There's been people in Hollywood channeling different stuff, extraterrestrial stuff, and that's nothing new. You know.
Why did they take it seriously?
The Unitarian Church.
Yeah. Richard, why do you think they took it that seriously?
Pardon?
Why do you think that these people took this channeled material seriously?
Don't you find that fascinating? Just like the Collins Elite.
Yeah.
You're talking about being predisposed to something or something. I don't know. Did psychedelics play into it?
Is it just an example of some
energy, some disincarnate intelligence fucking around? You know, I mean,
yeah.
I've seen that kind of stuff on Ouija boards, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but yeah, at a higher level than a Ouija board. But yeah, the same thing happens where they say that whatever it is, or maybe the person's subconscious or whatever, is sending people off in these wild goose chases.
Well, I mean, Indrid Cole and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say something not profound, but just an insight as to why these people would be interested. Oh, I remember, strangely enough, a quote from William Burroughs when he was talking about, you know, he had a story about people in the military being interested in psychic arts or phenomena or whatever. And he says one of the generals doesn't give a damn about, superstition or anything like that. All they care about is results. And if they can get results out of something, or they think they're getting results out of it, no matter how wacky it is,
absolutely.
Somebody may pursue that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
I think
it's like, we get the impression that this is something new. You know, this is not something new at all.
Yeah.
Using psychics with governments. Yeah. I mean, this is old as mankind himself.
Yeah.
The idea in a modern technological society would be using it is what's the shocking thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And, well, then people are shocked because Nancy Reagan used to consult an astrologer.
Well, yeah, that's one example.
I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's like, just because somebody is powerful, intelligent, scientific, whatever you want to call it, does not mean that they shut off what the mainstream tells them to shut off. In fact, it probably encourages them not to.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Henry Wallace both consulted Edgar Cayce.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
What did he tell them?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
But I am curious to do more investigating, and so now all the readings are available online if you join the ARE, so I actually sprung for it so I can do online research. Into the reading skill. I'm curious about that. I'm curious about it from this point of view, right? Be frank with you. I didn't realize that how big and prominent Cayce was at that time in the 20s and 30s, and he was consulted by many very big names on more than one occasion.
Yeah, and I think they kept it quite down low.
Right, and through the 30s and early 40s. I have read that some of it, but not all of it. And I want to do some more digging, which is why I joined, so I get access to complete access to the readings to see what he said. Because there was that whole kind of Anglo-Saxonism of the time, this belief that the white man was destined to rule because of his superior organizational and technological abilities. Right, that was embraced by many in the late 1800s and the 1900s.
Yes.
Just an unconscious assumption, of course, which justified the continuation of slavery to a large degree and manifest destiny and the traveling missionaries.
And just plain old racism.
Because we went out to find more trade across the Pacific, we took the traveling missionaries, as the Spanish did when they went into South America,
Yeah.
But this belief in the superiority of white culture was very insidious and pretty complete and normal at the time among white culture. Woodrow Wilson, embraced the idea of eugenics and and the superiority of the white man, you know, even though he believed that in social justice, he saw the white man as superior. It's a very prevailing meme.
Yes. You know, Richard, when you mentioned this and brought it up a few minutes ago, I was thinking, and I was sort of edging towards saying this, that the fact that people in power and with scientific training and all the things people consider mainstream people that would not mess with this mumbo jumbo.
Right.
I think the fact that they are in that position and they do feel privileged and they do feel a part and a way and a superior to most of the population means that these rules don't apply to them.
Right.
And they are free to use the means that people in power have used for centuries, which is, you know, psychic powers and astrology and all this, and they
absolutely,
and that's the, you know, the, I don't think it's a, you know, there's a disconnect anywhere. It's because they've insulated from everybody else and feel that they are a different, maybe even a different race than everybody else, and the rules don't apply to them. So,
and that comes with morality too.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely true. And you know, that's the unspoken bond.
And once you get either born into or put yourself into or lifted into that station in life, unfortunately, you just, I think some people, like I said, they don't think like everybody else does. They think that's what that got them there in the first place. And doing it even less like everybody else will get them even further.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just think that this element, I mean, including the eschatological elements in the documents and the stories is quite interesting. You know, we also had the Jim Jones experience, which was also something the CIA was neck deep involved in.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ken's not with us right now.
He had a lot
to say about that.
And the idea of manipulating cults, creating cults, and the whole 77 church hearings on MK Ultra and Artichoke and those other programs.
Yeah.
Which we got the sanitized version of, really.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of that stuff was destroyed before the hearings.
Yeah. And while the programs were shut down, the successful are promising elements of those programs, you can bet, went into private labs and you know,
yeah,
for further.
Doesn't matter how crazy it sounds, as long as it shows some promise.
Well, see, it's no problem for the Air Force, the Navy, or the Marines after seeing a trial project like that, you know, and this how it normally works. They go, hey, so yeah, you did that thing for CIA, and I'm reviewing, yeah, and guys, all right. They shut it down. Yeah. Okay. Well. Okay. How about you form a little group and we'll pay you to do it for us?
Yeah, but we'll pay you to be, you know, to work for, you know, Environmental Consultants International,
right,
or something,
right,
like that.
You'll be in SIGINT or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll be your, you know,
there'll be a line item buried in some other.
Right.
Budget.
Right. Even if it only works part of the time, that's what people
said. Yeah. Well, like I said, they're results oriented. You know.
Yeah.
They're like police departments.
Yeah, it does. We're not going to.
Because, you know, they do it because, well, shit, man. And then people didn't go to Casey because they had the answer to medical problems. They went when, well, you know, that's it. There's no hope. Well, you hear this guy, he gets pretty good. We're out of his house. Let's write him a letter, you know. And,
yeah.
They'd write him a letter, and he'd go into a trance, and they could be in Chicago, and he'd describe their bodies and what was going on. And
yeah. I think that's the idea with the remote viewing and some of those other things, mm-hmm, is that it worked seemingly often enough that it was a viable tool. Now, people, you know, a fundamentally skeptical person would say, well, there was, you know, it you could just not do it on demand, so it was useless.
Well, it's not right every time, but I mean, in case of someone in the 20th century whose records are quite there and available, Casey's results are, you know, way beyond any coincidence or chance. I mean, he could sit there and, you know, upstairs built a photography studio, laying on his back on a couch with his dad saying, or take a look for this person and see how their body is doing. And you can describe somebody, you know, in Chicago, and then tell them, go see Dr. So-and-so on Green Street, you know, and tell them to take an x-ray of your upper right rear molar, and they'll find an abscess. If they remove that right rear molar, you know, and clear out the abscess, you should be fine. You know, like, how do you do that? What kind of trick is that?
Yeah, who knows? I think it involves partly, and, you know, for whatever people's belief, they are on the belief spectrum. But it involves something that Dean Radin described to me when I asked him about faith healing. And I said, what do you think's going on there if you think there's anything to it? And I said, he said, I think there is something to it, possibly in some cases. But I think what's happening is the person is imagining what that person will be like later. Or, you know, they take it into the future or into the past or something like that. And maybe what Casey was doing was basically tuning into that person's time stream where they do get better and what happens, you know, what will or would happen if they followed that time stream or events stream, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I guess there's a bunch of probability junctures.
Yeah, exactly. He goes up the junctures to the good outcome and then tries to backtrack that somehow. I don't know. I may be thinking about these things too logically, but that seems to be, you know, that's the only way we have to think about things. And maybe that's the mechanism that was used. I do not know. And I do believe, you know, some of that stuff works occasionally. I've had personal experience with, you know, stuff that I shouldn't have known happening. It happened a long time ago, but there's no way I can explain
some of this
stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a period there where it was happening to me a lot.
Yeah, when I was doing the magazine, a lot of this stuff happened to me.
Well, for me, back in the 70s, all kinds of experiences, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's not because you've gone off the deep end and have joined a cult or whatever. It's just because you things that you can't explain or you that normally are not in your experience are happening to you, and there's no way to deny it. I had noises coming from my bookcase where my kachinas were, and this happened for like a year, and I could never, there was not, you know, there was nothing living there. I cleared it out. There was no nest of mice or anything there, nothing. I would hear this scraping noise coming right from where all the kachinas were, night after night after night after night, and there was nothing there, and I'd clear it all out and look around and put them all back, and the scraping would come back. I had things appear at my house I've told the story before. Somebody left a T-shirt for me, and we had been gone for like 3 days. And as we turned the corner to come down the street, I thought to myself, there's a package for me behind the door, the front door. How does a package get into our house behind the front door? But we walk in the house, and I fully expected to see it there, and I opened the door, and there was one there. It was a plastic bag with something. It was a T-shirt from the Assassination Museum in Dallas. A friend of mine had come and left it there. I said, I called him, and he called me days later and said, did you get your present? I said, what? That was you? I said, how'd you get it through the door? And he said, there was a weather strip. I just pushed it under there.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, that how did I know that? You know, he didn't tell me he was going to leave that there.
Yeah.
And I knew, I saw it in my mind as I turned the corner to come down the street to the house. It just popped into my mind.
Well, see, yeah, things like that happen to me quite frequently. I just think if you're paying attention, if you're noticing it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think my filtering is a lot more highly developed or a lot more complicated now than it used to be. I may not be open to these experiences, which is, and they could be happening all the time. I just don't notice it.
I think because I was thinking back in the 70s, you know, why I was having so much more of that kind of experience.
And I think you might draw it to you, too.
Yeah, it's kind of a cycle of inspiration, I think, a little bit. And also, I think it's an energetic thing. I think what I was doing back then was actually, you know, augmenting it or making it more, focusing me more. And my energy was more available and much more focused.
Yeah. Henry Ford said, when you project something that you want, somehow something notices this and steers it towards you.
Yeah, well, I'm always saying that. You know, I do think the universe is interactive. And, you know, that which you go looking for, you'll find.
Yeah.
You know, to some extent. In some form. Won't be in the form you quite expected it because
right,
you don't
right.
know your unconscious that well.
Right.
But, universe, pretty much people will find what they're looking for if they look hard.
Yeah.
in some form or another.
Yeah, and the point is to recognize it as, one, something that's you can use and is quote-unquote real for you, and that's the one part of it, and two is to do something about it.
Yeah, and I think also to remember, what do you want? Where are you going?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, if you don't know that, then you're either going to get nothing or get, you know, false lead after false lead after false lead, pulling you all, you know, left and right. And I think people get caught up in that, too.
Yeah, I think the more you can focus on a specific thing you want and narrow that, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just something as simple as, I would like more money. I mean, that's there's a million ways to do that.
No. I want $549.98 by June 12th. You find a way to go make it. You find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, but the point is that action has to be coupled with that. You can't just sit there and, you know, wish real hard,
activate.
Wait for it to come up. I mean, I guess that works sometimes.
Yeah, maybe sometimes. But I think it's activity draws activity.
Yes.
You know, that's why people network. I can tell you this as an actor, you know, the busier you are, the busier you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a snowball effect. And it's not, you can explain it as, well, that's because you're just making more connections. Like, well, that's true. But
you get in a role and your energy is sustained because you are busy, you know, and you are visible.
Yeah.
You bring other people's energy into it.
Yeah.
You know, into your success, into your, you know.
Yeah. When I was doing the magazine, that happened all the time.
Yeah.
It just kept building on itself and building on itself and building. And it ended up with, you know, doing those three books. And I think that was the end of that period. And who knows what's going on now. I'm still coasting here. And I would like to do something else. And it may have nothing to do with the UFO thing or the paranormal thing. I do not know.
I just know I want to get out of town this summer for 4 or 5 days. And I don't want to drag my wife through it because I don't quite know what I want to do. But I want to get up in the desert.
Why do we always want to go out to the desert?
By the pool, by the beach, and, you know,
what?
And have a relaxing vacation. I want to go out and explore, climb.
Yeah. Why do we always want to go out to the desert, Richard? What is that?
I don't know. I've been to the desert with a horse and no name.
Yeah. No, that's not. That has nothing to do with heroin. The guy that wrote the song actually said, "No, I was actually remembering when I used to live in the desert and how much I liked it."
Right. I never thought it did have anything to do with heroin. I heard that baloney.
Apparently, that was the big rumor for a long time.
I'm
drawn to the desert. So were the contactees. So was Jesus.
We got some friends.
So was
we have a place not too far from Big Rock.
Is what?
We have some friends. They have a place not too far from Big Rock.
You mean Giant Rock?
Giant Rock, excuse me, Giant Rock. And they keep inviting me out, you know, saying, oh, we're there every other weekend, you know, come on down and you can hang out there. And I really want to do that this summer. So I'm going to give them a call. They go, you see all kind of weird stuff in the sky. I said, well, yeah, that's where you probably would see it, you know, a lot of military testing back there. And,
yeah, there's a crossroads of a lot of different places out there.
Yeah.
In the air crossroads, I mean.
Yeah.
You should. What it would be interesting to do, you just gave me this idea. Find all the plots for UFO activity over the last, you know, few decades and look at the aeronautical chart for Southern California or whatever area that you're looking at and see what matches.
Yeah, that would be a good way to weed things out a bit.
Well, and then see a pattern that you may not have, that nobody may have noticed before.
Yeah.
You know, there's a, you know, a large swath of things going between, you know, the Yuma Proving Ground and Edwards or something.
That would be very interesting. I was thinking of this, because
there was that thing that crashed near the river a few years ago.
Me, we're shooting. And he lives in kind of a shack out in the desert. Near the backside, faces towards the back of Pendleton. And he said he got to take a pee off his porch one morning at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he noticed these red lights in front of him going across and then stopped. And they formed a triangle. And he started watching, and then it started moving slowly again to his left. And then it stopped and rotated on its own axis and started moving back towards Pendleton.
Pendleton's a real hot spot.
A little further, you could see it outlined against the sky, and it was a triangle with a red light at each corner. And it wasn't that high. It was rather low.
Yeah.
Now, see, I think of that as being, you know, some kind of hardened blimp military experiment kind of thing.
Yeah. Pendleton is kind of a hot spot in, well, I don't know, I guess throughout its history, but over the last few years I've been, kind of been paying attention. Stuff seems to happen there. And right near the freeway, near the 5, that goes right through the ocean part of it. If you fly over Pendleton, like out past the military zone there, high enough and pass out over the ocean, Pendleton goes way the hell back in the backcountry there.
Oh, yeah.
Behind that big mountain that's on the next to San Onofre.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of real estate back there that Pendleton owns.
Well, that's what stunned me about Fort Ord when I was stationed there, man. I went way back, too.
That's Northern California, or Central California coast, right?
By Monterey, just above Monterey.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember on the map exercise when they turned us loose and we had to, you know, and work our way back by the next day or something. I got up to one hill on the outback, you know,
yeah,
in Fort Ord, where I could see the Spreckle Sugar factory over in Salinas. I could see the whole coast, you know. And I went, man, this it must be 20, 30 miles of land there, you know.
Yeah. No, they have a huge amount of land, and there's a lot of things that go on at on that land that you would never see, except if you have sort of a view, like Paul Minowitz did.
Yeah.
Or
well,
your
I would think
did.
The same thing about if you looked around the right way on Indian reservations.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's another thing that I mean, Ken's not in here about, but the whole thing with the Cabazon.
Well, I remember with Cabazon that, you know, Reconosciuto case.
Yeah.
And that was also something Mike was very deeply looking at and involved in. Had some really good information on
that. Oh, that's right.
And even done some stakeouts on that.
What, really? What did he? Since people listening are going to go, what? Mike Cabazon stakeouts?
Fred Alvarez was killed.
Yeah,
he was the he was killed. You know, and then the deal went through. Whatever.
Yeah,
you know? I know he was looking very close at that. I know, whatever they were deeply involved in it.
Why?
I don't know exactly, but it had to do with arms and the manufacture of fuel air explosives on that reservation.
Right.
And a facility that was being hidden with a big sign saying Southern California Edison on it.
Ah, okay.
That's all I remember. That's such a long time ago. That's probably the whole Danny Castellaro.
Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing about that and then reading up on fuel air explosives and how they could be as powerful or more than atomic weapons. It's just there was no radiation. It would just, you know.
Well, that's where we signed agreements not to manufacture them, so the way we got around it is by doing it on sovereign Indian land.
Right.
You know, under the eyes of Wackenhut.
Yeah, and that's a whole you know, that's a whole
the
secret history.
Deal again.
That's a whole secret history that a lot of people don't know about is the sellout of Indian lands to private companies and maybe in parts of the government that want to do research and they don't have to worry about regulations because it's basically a foreign country.
Exactly.
And all they have to do is make deals with the right people and they all look the other way and then the tribe either reaps the benefits they have their health or whatever ruined by whatever's going on their land there.
See, that's this whole thing about privatization. You can get away with it. Through privatization, you can get away with anything.
Yeah, because you're not subject to the same laws as
you
the government.
You hide everything in the private companies.
Yeah, that's what Walter, when he first started coming on the show, was... saying was that he says he thinks a lot of this UFO and paranormal information has been and whoever might deal with it has been farmed out to private entities so that they're not subject to any kind of disclosure. Since they're private entities considered private citizens or whatever, they don't have to release any files.
Well, that's the whole point that Annie Jacobson made in her book about the parallel classification system created by the Atomic Energy Commission. That has evolved ever since under different names.
Uh-huh.
But many of those projects, according to one of her sources, was, you know, they would hide them out there where, you know, they were in charge, not the military, not the government, but the contractor.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what you see. There's different big chunks out there that's just controlled by the contractors with private security.
Yeah.
You know? And there are a lot of very exotic projects, not just there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Utah and...
Yeah, I mean, these are the places we know about,
believe me, in the middle of Australia, in the South Indian Ocean, I mean, there's stuff going on in a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah, stuff that's...
And all farmed out to private corporations, the Raytheons and the Bechtels and... I don't think I'll name some of the others.
Yeah, the fact that the whole disclosure thing ignores that problem. Anything since probably the 70s or so, maybe even earlier than that. A lot of that stuff started getting steered, and then probably more after during Reagan. There was probably a big push to just privatize it all.
Yep, that was the big push. That was the carte blanche card they wanted.
Yeah. It's 10 minutes after 10, Richard. The next show isn't in. Do you want to wind it up, or what would you like to do?
Well, wherever you want to go, I'm pretty wiped out.
Okay. Okay, well then we will continue at some other point here. I'd like to see.
Yeah, there's actually more to talk about.
There's tons more to talk about. We could stay on for 5 hours, or till we passed out. Sigrid's sitting here, and she said no.
Yeah, my wife's kind of doing that too.
Why are you talking about all this UFO crap?
Oh, I am. Tell them I'm going to really pick out the day and get this drag you guys up here. Tell Sigrid to get her bathing suit ready.
I will. She's nodding very, very vigorously now. All right, Richard, thanks so much for being on the show and really getting into depth on a lot of these things. I think we covered stuff that we haven't covered in the other shows, and I was able to say what I wanted to say, and maybe I won't say anything anymore now.
Well, I think there's more territory to dig into there.
Oh, well, of course there is.
If I were more focused right now, I might be able to do a better job with you on it. But you can always repeat this and extend it.
Yeah. And we will, and we'll see. I'll see what people say about the show in the comments, and if they, I'm sure they'll want another one, and maybe we can do a kind of a listener-driven question and answer.
Cool. Yeah.
All right, Richard. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good night.
And always fascinating to talk to you and talk to somebody that's got a kind of a broader view and is not really locked into any ideology on it, and who shares a lot of this, you know, pulled me along on his journey for many years, and I guess still is, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it was fun.
All right, Richard, I'll talk to you soon then.
All right, bud, talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ah, my friend Richard Saraday, who I've known for, like we said, for about 15 years or more, 93, so that's more than that. That's 17 years. Frightening! 18 years? I can't remember everything we talked about. We went all over the map. I hope that what I said on this show and on Don's show makes clearer what I was trying to say. I will try and write up what I've talked about and try and keep it short. Probably put it on the Radio Mysterioso site and then probably kind of drop it after that, because I already see where the information's going as regards to Harry Rosicky, and it's kind of what I expected, but what I hope is that somebody with a kind of a larger view or a nuanced view or a non-dogmatic view of that whole period of UFO history and the government involvement with it can take it further and either get back to me or at least just say, look, this is where, you know, Bill Moore was and where Richard Doty was, and researchers that fed off of them or listened to them, like me or Grant Cameron or Don or any of these people, and where they go further with it. I would like to see this where it goes a little further. And if people want to get back to me on it, somebody that knows something, go right ahead and email me at the Radio Mysterioso address, greg@radiomysterioso.com. Or, you know, if you're that important, you probably know my number. You know, just give me a strange, mysterious phone call. But thanks so much for listening. Let's see what we can play ourselves out with. I can't pick this stuff while I'm talking. I don't have an engineer. I am the engineer as well. So your host, producer, and engineer. You're the Sunshine of My Life by Jim Nabors. Wow, sounds terrible already. Come on, Jim, sing.
You are the sunshine of my life.
Oh, my God, that's Gomer Pyle. See you next week.
That's why I'll always be around. You are the apple of my eye. Forever you stay in my heart. I feel like this is the beginning.